Welcome. I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Last week, the Senate passed its version of the Agricultural Reform, Food, and Jobs Act of 2013, commonly known as the Farm Bill. With a budget of just under $500 billion, it sets the course for U.S. agricultural and food policies for the next 5 years. The House begins debate today on its version of the bill, which includes deep cuts to the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program, or SNAP, better known as food stamps. One in seven Americans currently depend on food stamps, and if the current House bill were to become law, more than 2 million of them would no longer be eligible for the program. Food stamps make up more than three-quarters of the budget for this bill, but there's a lot more to it, from crop subsidies to conservation programs, school lunch to food aid, all of which affect what we eat and the shape of the global food economy. So, as we continue our Agenda for a New Economy series on Your Call, we'll dig into what the Farm Bill is now and also ask what it could be. How could the Farm Bill, or maybe it should be called the Food Bill, make our country healthier? What role could federal policy play in encouraging a more sustainable future for agriculture in this country? Joining us to begin the conversation is one of the country's leading agricultural journalists, Jerry Hagstrom. He's a contributing editor for National Journal, and he's been called an unsung hero of American journalism for his work on agricultural policy by the American Journalism Review. Jerry joins us from Washington. Jerry, thanks so much for being part of the program today.
Thank you. It's very nice to be with you. I'm sitting out on the steps of the Capitol to talk to you while I wait for more action on the bill.
Well, talk. Why don't you just tell us right now? So the Senate passed its version of the bill last week. The House is beginning debate now, and it sounds like it might move pretty quickly towards a vote. What are the key differences here? What should people know about?
Well, the major difference between the House and the Senate bill is that the House would cut food stamps a lot more. As you said, it would cut $20 billion over 10 years, although the whole program is expected to cost $760 billion over 10 years, so it's still a relatively small cut. And then there are some differences among the commodity programs that benefit crops like wheat and corn and rice and peanuts. But those are pretty small. It's the food stamp cut that's the big one.
Yeah, let's talk for a minute about food stamps. Why? I mean, of course, I know that critics of President Obama during the presidential campaign in 2012, you know, talked about him being the food stamp president. And so it's been a contentious, it's been a politically charged issue. But it seems like at this time when, you know, certainly a lot of people are still in economic distress and there's a real hunger problem in the United States, that cuts to food stamps seem like an odd place to be going after.
Well, I can certainly see that viewpoint. A lot of this has to do with the fact that the Senate is controlled by the Democrats, the House is controlled by the Republicans, and the way that the congressional districts are structured at the present time, the members of Congress want to play to their bases. And there are a lot of conservative Republicans who think that there are too many people on the food stamp program. They dislike the growth in the bill, even during the recession. And so they've been putting pressure on the Republicans to cut as much as possible out of food stamps. And there are going to be amendments offered that would cut even more from the food stamp program. So even the $20 billion is a compromise in a way.
So for people, I mean, one in seven Americans receive food stamps. Talk about how, so it's not just a cut in the number of dollars, it's a change in the way eligibility be determined. Can you, in simple terms, can you tell us how that would change who might be affected?
It's complicated, but I will try. What's happened during the recession is that the government has allowed the states to be a little bit easier on their qualifications. For example, if you were really to follow the strict national standard on food stamps, a food stamp recipient would be allowed to have a car that's valued only at $4,500. Now, these days, most people's cars are worth more money than that. They simply cost more than that. And so the states have been allowed to ignore the asset test on automobiles. They don't have to. Some states still do apply it. But what you have in this recession is a lot of people who had fairly good incomes and have houses and they have cars and therefore You know, they had a middle-class lifestyle, but now they don't have any cash, and they qualify for food stamps. And the Republicans in the House would like to cut back on some of this, apply the national standard on things like the car asset test again. So we'll have to see how it goes in the debate on the House floor.
Well, Jerry, I definitely want to open up the conversation to our listeners specifically about this issue, which is, I think most people don't realize that food stamps make up three-quarters of the budget for what's called the Farm Bill, and, you know, the changes that might be coming down the pike around this. If you're someone who has been a recent or past recipient of food stamps, if you've, you know, if you've benefited from this program, or if you're someone who's critical maybe of the expansion of the program, we'd love to hear from you at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. We can also take your emails at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Jerry, you, working for the National Journal and in other roles, have been covering farm bills for a long time. Tell us, how does this process work? I understand, because I know, you know, when we read coverage, it talks about a 5-year bill, and then at the same time, people also talk about a 10-year budget for it. How does this work, and how did it to get to be this way that things like forestry, food stamps, conservation programs are all in the same big bill?
Okay, well, first of all, the bill covers almost all the programs that are run by the Agriculture Department. And the food stamp program was created in the 1960s at a time when there was a recognition that there were hungry people in the country, and also at a time when the farm population, the rural population, was getting smaller and smaller, and it was harder and harder to get the number of votes needed to pass the farm bill. There just weren't as many congressional districts that were interested in it. So when the food stamp program was created, and it has saved millions of people over the decades from hunger, it was put in the farm bill, and we have had what we call the farm to table coalition that passes the bill. And that means it's everybody from the congressmen who represent the purely farm districts to the most inner city people where they have absolutely no farming and their only interest is in the nutrition programs. Now, on the point of how we have a 5-year bill and a 10-year budget, the Farm Bill traditionally covers a 5-year period on the theory that within every 5-year period, there are changes that happen in agriculture, in the world economy, in scientific knowledge, and that there need to be adjustments to the farm program. But Congress requires that all bills be budgeted on a 10-year basis. So the Congressional Budget Office does an estimation of what the bill would cost over 10 years. So that's why we have the 5-year bill and the 10-year budget.
Thank you so much, Jerry, because those of us who don't spend our time in congressional debates and following this, I think it can be confusing to folks and say, like, how do these policies get made? And this 5-year bill, it's been more than 5 years since the last bill, is that right?
Yes, because last year, quite frankly, the Republicans refused to bring the bill up in the House. There's a theory that they were hoping that Romney would get elected president and that they might have a Republican Senate so they could pass a bill more to their liking this year. But that didn't happen, so we're a year late. The 2008 bill was extended for another year, and now we are writing a bill that would go through 2018.
Okay. So the other part of food stamps, that obviously is the most kind of That's something everybody understands, a very politically intense discussion going on over that. The White House is talking about a potential veto if the cuts the House is talking about would go through. But a big area I think many people think of when they think of the Farm Bill is subsidies to agriculture, to farmers, to agribusiness. How would this current bill, the options that are out there now, the Senate and House options, change the way that that support is carried out?
Well, the bill would eliminate a program that are called direct payments, which are payments that have been going to the producers of certain crops, the big crops like wheat and cotton, corn, soybeans, that have been going to them every year since 1996. That's about $5 billion a year. But that program has become very unpopular because the farmers get it whether prices are high or low, and in recent years the prices have been very high.
So it's guaranteed payments regardless of what happens with prices or people's crops.
Exactly, exactly. And that will be replaced by a different program of paying the farmers when their revenue or the price goes down. Now, in addition to that, the bill provides for crop insurance, a program in which the government pays two-thirds of the premium and the farmers pay one-third, and that's a program that that pays money when the when there are weather problems, especially hailstorms and droughts and floods, et cetera. That is a program that is a shared expense, and it has been viewed as something superior to the direct subsidy programs.
And so that change in how that support happens. Talk about who is actually getting that those guaranteed payments now that then would move to this more subsidized insurance program. People have this idea of the family farm, but there's also, of course, a lot of talk about big agribusiness. What do we know about those federal supports? Where do they go to? Who do they benefit?
Okay. The farm subsidies and the crop insurance benefits go mostly to individual farmers. And by that, I mean the commodity producers, the wheat farmers, the cotton farmers. Now, when we think about agribusiness, we're usually thinking about corporations that process food, but they don't actually get those subsidies. They benefit from them because there is a stability in the supply of the commodities, but they don't get the subsidies. I have a kind of joke about this, that the corporations wouldn't want to get involved in commodity production because farmers work so hard. We have a saying in Washington that farmers are self-exploitive because they will work long hours, they'll go out and fix a fence on Sunday, but if it were the corporation and the people were being paid on an hourly basis, they would demand that they got time and a half wages if they were going to work all these extra hours. So it really does benefit individual farmers, individual families, but those farms have gotten a lot bigger over the years than they were, let's say, in the 1930s or 40s or 50s. It's true. These are most of the production in the country takes place on big farms now, but they are individually or family owned.
And so what you're talking about is the way that the system works is that the federal government provides some support to individual farmers, large and small, that helps them absorb risk. But then at the same time, you have agribusiness that works with the farmers, and they're basically shielded from the risk by that relationship by having the farmers take the ups and downs of the crop cycles and that kind of thing. What happens with the weather?
I couldn't have said it better myself. You just gave a fantastic summary of it.
Do my darndest, Jerry. Thank you so much. I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar here on Your Call, talking to Jerry Hagstrom, who's an award-winning agricultural journalist. He's on Capitol Hill, actually sitting right outside the Capitol. He's a contributing editor for National Journal, and he's following the debate on what's known as the Farm Bill, which also has a huge impact on what we eat and the food economy, not just in this country, but internationally. And I want to welcome to the program Kari Hammerschlag. She's a senior food policy analyst at Environmental Working Group. That is an environmental health research and advocacy organization that follows agricultural policy very closely. Kari, welcome to Your Call.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Great to have you with us. So we've been talking to Jerry about changes specifically to what's going to be happening with crop subsidies. And he's been talking about, this move from the guaranteed support for farmers to something more heavily subsidizing crop insurance. You work for the Environmental Working Group. Talk about the implications of crop subsidies in either form of this for the kind of agriculture we have in this country and the environmental impacts of that. Because I think a lot of people in the Bay Area in particular care about how food is grown and what the impact, not just on our individual health, but on the broader environment is.
Sure. Crop insurance has replaced the direct payment program, as Jerry was probably saying. It's grown to a huge program of $9 billion a year today. And that program is really highly concentrated with the benefits flowing to the very largest farms, which really creates a playing field that is badly tilted in favor of the most profitable farms and has the effect of driving the smaller farms out of business. You have the situation here in California, for example, where one farmer, he's a cotton farmer growing over 100,000 acres of cotton and tomatoes, receiving $1.6 million in crop insurance premium subsidies. And under this terrible farm bill, this farmer will continue to get unlimited crop insurance subsidies while they want to cut, you know, the very small supports for families who are really struggling with hunger in this country, who are struggling to put food on the table. And it's just unconscionable. So first of all, there's just a fairness issue here where you have this farm bill, which has, you know, is putting in place, it's really rearranging the deck in terms of subsidies, where you have, you know, no limits, no means testing, and you have guaranteed profits for crop insurance companies. So part of the crop insurance program involves paying crop insurance companies $1.3 billion in subsidies every year.
So you're talking about the insurance providers that set up these policies for farmers?
Right, that's right. The insurance companies, there's about 15 of them. They're very specialized. Several of them are actually foreign-owned companies. It's also a highly concentrated industry where you have just three companies controlling 50% of the market. So it's really bad policy. You know, you asked about the environmental impacts of this, and you know, another and also kind of the kinds of the health impacts. And so there's a number of issues to talk about there. You know, first in terms of the health impacts. You know, the current farm bill investments. This farm bill is totally out of step with the nutritional needs of our country. You know, we're told to fill half of our plates with fruits and vegetables, and yet only a tiny fraction of the farm bill is actually dedicated to the production and promotion of healthy foods, which, of course, is much to California's detriment, since we grow, you know, half of the fruits, nuts, and vegetables that are grown in this country. And, you know, instead of directing money into healthy fruits and vegetables, most of the funding outside of the food stamp program are going to support the production of these commodity crops that are providing raw materials for animal feed, junk food, and fuel for our cars. And, in fact, we're spending 8 times more on commodity crops than we are on healthy fruits and vegetables. And so, you know, that has big implications for the health of our nation. Fewer than 5% of Americans are getting what they require in terms of healthy fruits and vegetables. And yet this farm bill will just continue to spend billions and billions and billions of dollars to channel, you know, unlimited resources to the most profitable farms growing commodity crops, often in ways that actually harm the environment. Most of them are GMO crops, while really underinvesting in conservation programs and healthy food programs, organic programs. It's really outrageous. This bill is a terrible bill, and, you know, we don't support it in its current form. It needs to be, you know, significantly amended, and that's kind of where we're at right now. Tomorrow there's going to be a process of introducing a series of amendments that could really go a long way to improving the bill.
Well, Kari, I want to get our listeners, who I know have been paying attention to what you and Jerry have to say, and have probably been following questions of food policy, questions of what kind of agricultural system we're going to have and the role the federal government plays in pushing us one direction or the other. I want to invite folks to join the conversation. If you're involved in agriculture directly, whether it's in a city or in a rural area, if you're interested in the kind of food that's available and thinking about how these policies shape that, if you have a question about what you've heard about food stamps, about crop subsidies, the number to call is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. If you're someone who might be affected by the changes to the food stamp program, more than 1 in 7 Americans depend on food stamps. If the House bill that's being discussed right now and might be voted on as soon as Thursday becomes law, more than 2 million Americans could lose their food stamp benefits. The number to call, 866-798-8255. Or you can email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And Jerry, I want to get back to you to ask specifically about what the role of California legislators is in this, because it's kind of, I mean, obviously we're a huge agricultural state, and yet in some ways what Kari is saying is we're a bit at the edge of this discussion in terms of how the policies are set.
California benefits quite a bit from the Farm Bill. I want to point out one thing about the fruit and vegetable industry. Mm-hmm. It is highly concentrated. There is an image that fruits and vegetables are grown mostly by small farmers, but that really isn't true. Most of the fruits and vegetables are grown by large operations. And they do have the advantage of things like grading standards, which do not allow low-quality fruit to be sold and bruised fruit that would bring down the prices of these items. So it's not true that they don't benefit from agricultural programs. Now, certainly, it would be good if we ate more fruits and vegetables. And I'm hoping that in the future there will be programs that encourage more of that consumption. There are some small programs in the bill to make it cheaper for food stamp recipients to buy fruits and vegetables.
Yeah, maybe we could talk for a minute. I mean, obviously we've had we've had Michelle Obama talking about obesity as a national crisis. And, you know, here we have a bill that it's called a farm bill, but in many ways it really is a food bill. And what role, Jerry, I mean, as you followed the changes, but what role could, how have you seen a change in policies, the introduction of these, what you say are relatively small programs? What do those look like? And where, you know, how could the federal government do something about this through its farm and food policy?
Well, first of all, the biggest change that I have seen in food policy has not been in the Farm Bill, but in another bill called the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act, which set the standards for the foods that are served in the school lunch program, and also the standards for the special nutrition program for women, infants, and children. And that's the one that benefits the pregnant women and the babies. Those standards have been improved. In terms of the farm bill, the biggest issue is whether you would somehow restrict what people can buy on food stamps. For example, don't let them buy soda pop, don't let them buy potato chips. But the critics say that if you did that, you'd have to have a whole division of the agriculture department that would decide what foods they could buy. And that would be very difficult. So at the moment, they can buy all foods except hot foods, and they, of course, are not allowed to buy anything like cigarettes or cleaning materials that are also sold in grocery stores.
That's the voice of Jerry Hagstrom. He's an award-winning agricultural journalist. And also with us is Kari Hammerschlag, senior food policy analyst at the Environmental Working Group. And she is here in Oakland. Kari, we've got about a minute before we go to break. What would you add to what Jerry said in terms of how the federal government, through its food and farm policies, could really have an impact on something like obesity?
Well, I think there could be a lot more support for the healthy food programs in the Farm Bill right now. It's true that the specialty crop industry does get some benefit from the Farm Bill. There's research and promotion programs, but still, it's the commodity crops that get eight times as much as the fruits and vegetables, and certainly those are the direct payments that go to farmers versus kind of big broad programs. There's a number of programs in the Farm Bill that support local and regional food systems and organic agriculture that I think where there's tremendous demand from consumers. And it's very small. It's in California, over the last 3 years, for example, about $500 million went to support local food systems. That's over 4 years. It's a very tiny percentage of the Farm Bill. So we could increase support for things like local food promotion and farmers markets, the specialty crops block grant program, the value-added producer grant program. There's a whole range of small programs that are really having tremendous...
Kari, I know we've got folks in our audience who've participated in those programs. I want to invite them to call at 866-798-8255. This is Your Call. We'll be back with more about the Farm Bill after this.
Public Radio KALW San Francisco. We're inviting you to join in today's conversation. You can call 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. Or send an email question or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org.
Welcome. I'm Matt Martin. This is Your Call. I'm sitting in for Rose Aguilar. We are podcasting our show. You can find more information at our website. That's yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there and sign up for our email newsletter to find out what's coming up. Speaking of what's coming up tomorrow, we are going to be talking about the Affordable Care Act and what it's going to mean for people in California. If you are someone who is uninsured or underinsured, or you want to know how you might be affected by the Affordable Care Act, you will want to tune in, and you can also send your questions beforehand to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we are talking about the Farm Bill, which is also really a food bill. It talks a lot about what we eat and how it will be grown, and we are asking for you to join the conversation. And we're with us experts who know a lot about this, Jerry Hagstrom, an award-winning agricultural journalist. He's actually on Capitol Hill right now, where the House is taking up its version of the Farm Bill. The Senate passed its version last week. And also with us from Oakland is Kari Hammerschlag, senior food policy analyst at the Environmental Working Group, which has closely followed this bill from a number of perspectives. I want to welcome onto the program William in Belvedere, who will be our first caller today. Welcome, William.
Thank you very much. I'm very interested in how these subsidies interact with the criteria of the NAFTA and the World Trade Organization limitations on subsidies. It seems to me that several of those that you have mentioned, of the forms of subsidies, crop insurance, direct payments, and other kinds of subsidies, allow U.S.-produced products to be sold for a lower price by the farmers in the United States to be sold abroad, because the government is paying for part of the cost of production. But I thought that the World Trade Organization regulations and NAFTA regulations, at the same time as they took away the tariffs, were supposed to prevent countries from having government subsidies for private industries of various kinds.
Jerry Hagstrom, do you want to weigh in on that? Why doesn't the WTO prevent these kind of subsidies?
I'm sorry, I could not hear the caller.
Yes, so
could you repeat the question?
His question was, when I hear about all these crop subsidies and crop insurance programs, he says, I thought that things like the World Trade Organization were supposed to stop governments from favoring their farmers over others. Why isn't that forbidden by something like the WTO?
Well, yes, the WTO is supposed to stop that, but it has only done that to a degree. The farm program is smaller than it used to be, mostly because the commodity prices have been so high and we're selling so much to China and other countries in Asia. So the WTO has only prevented some of those some of that favoritism, and of course the European Union still heavily subsidizes its farmers. And many other countries have various farm programs as well.
Have U.S. crop subsidies been challenged? Kari, I'll get you in as well. Go ahead.
I was just going to actually address that because, in fact, I think your listeners may be surprised and shocked to hear that we are actually paying Brazilian cotton farmers right now under a settlement under the WTO because they found that our cotton subsidy program was out of compliance with our trade agreement. Hmm. And we're very concerned. There's a new price guarantee program in the House bill that basically sets price guarantees just below or even above market prices in some cases. And what that means is when prices fall just below the average prices, we're going to generate billions of dollars in subsidy payments to these farms. And, of course, the largest farms will get the largest payouts. And there is a question as to whether or not this new program, it's called Price Loss Coverage, whether that would be call into question our commitment to trade agreements under the WTO.
And so price loss coverage means that if prices for certain commodities fall below a certain point, then that insurance will make up the difference.
That's right. It's not insurance, actually. This is a different program.
Okay.
This is essentially a price guarantee program. So,
on the part
for
of
example,
the government.
If the price falls just to 96% of what the wheat price is right now, it would kick in for farmers. Cotton is essentially at 99% of average prices. So it's a very generous subsidy. And again, we're concerned that if prices actually fall, which is very possible, that this new subsidy in the House bill, which we hope will be eliminated through amendments as we go to the House floor tomorrow, that that they're going to end up paying out, taxpayers will end up paying out more in subsidies than we did under the direct payment program.
Jerry,
concerns with that.
Jerry, from your analysis of the bills that are being considered right now, do you think that that's likely? That it might actually be more money paid out?
I would not say that it's likely. I would say that it's possible. This is, the programs are supposed to pay out when a kind of crisis occurs. There has just been a payment on the sugar program for the first time in 10 years. Last year, the payment in the crop insurance program was huge. But that was also after about 10 years in which there had not been big payments under that program. So that is the way that it's supposed to work, which does bring us to a central issue in the Farm Bill, is that if you're going to be in favor of it, you have to accept that that's the way that the system is. Senator Debbie Stabenow, the chairman of the Senate Agriculture Committee, says it's a dual program. You have food stamps for everybody when they get into financial trouble, and you have these programs for the farmers when they have a bad year.
All right. Well, let's. We just have so many calls and questions coming on. We'll make sure we get them addressed, because, like that one, finding out, because of a previous subsidy program, we're now paying Brazil for violations under international trade agreements. I think most people don't know about that. So thank you so much for that information, Kari and Jerry as well. We had a caller who could not stay on the line who wanted to know, does a bill like this have the potential to distort the marketplace in favor of more genetically modified food? Do you see the Farm Bill pushing one way or the other in terms of GMOs? Kari, why don't you start?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. Under the Farm Bill, I mean, all of the incentives in the program, both the crop insurance program and the this new price loss coverage program, are geared towards GMO crops. 93% of our soy is GMO corn, 88% of our corn, our cotton. Those three crops are heavily subsidized, and so it's really a choice. You know, do taxpayers want their tax dollars going to support the production of these crops? And also, you know, keep in mind these crops are grown in ways that are really harmful for the environment. The production practices are increasing the use of fertilizer and pesticides, herbicides. They're ending up in our water, and they're depleting soils at rapid rates, major soil erosion problems. These programs are also increasing the taking the risk away from farming. So farmers are plowing up prairie land at just very rapid rates. 23 million acres of native prairie and wetlands have been converted in the last 5 years. And that's, you know, taxpayers are supporting that.
Actually, Kari, you brought up something that's that I feel really strong about that I definitely want to address, which just is this idea of topsoil as one of our really limited resources that doesn't, you know, we talk about peak oil, but we don't talk about, hey, well, just how much topsoil do we have to work with, and, you know, and how are we going to preserve it? Jerry, I want to get you to weigh in first on that question about GMOs, and then the question of just, you know, I mean, I know there have been conservation programs that have tried to reduce erosion and that kind of thing. What's the fate of them if the bills that we're looking at now would pass, and what more might farm policy do to preserve that critical resource?
Sure. Well, in terms of the GMOs, the Farm Bill is neutral on this issue. But for the crops that have genetically modified seed, like corn, soybeans, and cotton, of course, you could say that the bill does encourage their production. Now, that would not be true in the case of wheat, which does not have any commercialized GMOs, even though there was that one little group of wheat plants that were found in that field up in Oregon. So it just depends on whether there are genetically modified seeds in that crop. In terms of the conservation programs, I would say that the situation with conservation in the country is dramatically better today than it was 40 years ago. But part of the reason was that in the late 70s and early 1980s, when we had a surplus of farm crops, a program was passed called the Conservation Reserve Program, in which a lot of land was taken out of production. But it was for a combination of conservation reasons and economic reasons, because the officials wanted to reduce the supply. Well, now the issue is that there's so much worldwide demand that and the prices are so high that the farmers are taking land out of that program and plowing it again and putting it back into production. That's a very difficult issue to address. But the thing is, if you don't have the land in production, then you have to pay the farmers to keep it out of production. And a lot of people really dislike it when the government is paying farmers not to farm.
Jerry Hagstrom, I know you have to go in just a moment. You're covering the House debate that is happening right now. I want to get one last caller in, and that is Paul from Corralitos. Paul, welcome to your call.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. This issue has been raging since the 70s, where I went to UC Davis. And we were talking about the lack of subsidies for organic farmers and how the whole farm bill and the farm industry was moving toward, you know, consolidation and monopoly. Biggest farms, where the Green Revolution really showed that it failed in terms of producing monocultural crops and, you know, trying to say to the world, we're going to ensure we can produce food, but it took the democracy out of food production. And I think what everybody has to look at is that in order to ensure that we're going to have food that's portable, that's safe, we have to democratize food production again. We're talking about urban farms, encouraging small farmers, and making sure we get the subsidies and support for, you know, the family and community farming projects so that we're not faced with, you know, a handful of producers that can dictate how seeds are going to be produced, that they're going to have fertilizers and pesticides to survive, et cetera.
Paul, I definitely want, I'm going to get Jerry Hagstrom to respond before you go, because I know he's got to return to his work. Thank you so much for the call. Jerry, quickly, before you leave us, this criticism of obviously big agriculture and it, you know, it's a certain model, and the role that the government plays in supporting it has been around for a while. Is change happening in terms of people's consciousness about that in Washington?
You know, it's hard for me to say that it's happening much in Washington, but it's happening in the countryside and in the cities, and that's what really matters. For people who want to change the model of agriculture, I would say it helps when you patronize organic agriculture, when you go to those farmers markets, when you buy from the local farmers. That has much more of an impact because eventually that message gets to the policymakers.
Great. Thank you so much, Jerry Hagstrom, for joining us. Jerry Hagstrom is an award-winning agricultural journalist, contributing editor for the National Journal. He's been covering agricultural policy for decades, so he's seen the long arc of it. Also with us today as we discuss the farm bill that is right now on the House floor being debated is Kari Hammerschlag. She's a senior food policy analyst at the Environmental Working Group, which follows this bill up and down. I recommend you go to yourcallradio.org, find the link to their site. You can learn all about a lot of angles on the farm bill and its effect on food policy and the environment. And joining us now is Dan Imhoff. He's a researcher, author, and independent publisher who has concentrated for nearly 20 years on issues related to farming, the environment, and design. And he's the author of Food Fight, The Citizen's Guide to a Food and Farm Bill. Dan, thanks so much for being on your call.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's a good conversation.
And Dan, I definitely want to bring you in. Not hearing you right now at the moment, so I'm hoping we'll get Dan in here in just a moment. Great. Thank you so much, Dan. And so you obviously were just listening in on Paul's call talking about this long arc of this battle over federal agricultural policy and the model of food that we have. Jerry Hagstrom has covered the legislation saying, you know, people on the ground are changing even if the conversation in Washington isn't. Where do you come into this? You know, you've written this book, Food Fight, The Citizen's Guide to a Food and Farm Bill.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Go ahead.
Okay. I come at it from a couple angles. First of all, the one that I think people really have to listen carefully to is that it is an amazing opportunity and a gift to have $1 trillion to invest in feeding people and helping manage the land over a 10-year period. The real question is, you know, what are the overarching goals that we're trying to accomplish through this legislation? And when you go back to the very beginning, I wasn't here at the beginning of the show, but you know, this came out of the Depression, and it came out of a time period when the government decided that agriculture does not work like a market works, like an industrial market works. There's certain things like taking care of the water, the soil. The markets don't take care of, and also feeding people. And when you go back to the real essence of this bill, it's to try to compensate farmers, a food system, for things that aren't quite right. And so when we look at what we're trying to accomplish with the bill today, as opposed to 10 years ago or 30 or 40 or 70, you know, you have to say, what kind of problems are we solving, and who's really going to benefit? And if our subsidy programs really are just going to make the big farms bigger to grow this really, really small number of crops, which are mainly used to feed animals in confinement, and then take care of this tremendous waste problem and chemical problem making the feed, then I think we have to step back and say, whoa, you know, this system's kind of gotten away from us. And that's where this conversation about conservation, you know, really using that precious money, those $20 billion every year, to try to reward farmers to produce things that we really need, like, you know, sequestered carbon in the soil, protected water that we all share, and an increasing affordability of sustainably produced foods that are diverse. They're not just fed to animals. And that's the real discussion that we should be having.
Well, Dan Imhoff, we're definitely into having that discussion here on Your Call. And for the next 10 minutes, I want to invite you and Kari and also our listeners to talk about how do we, from where we are, intervene in this discussion that's happening in Washington, that, you know, if a bill like this is passed, it has a long-term impact, and now is the time to really make people's voices heard. The number to call is 866-798-8255. If you have questions, if you want to know how to take part in this discussion, what to say to your representative when you give a call, now is the time to be here, involved here on Your Call, 866-798-8255, or you can email feedback@yourcallradio.org. So, Dan, your book is called, you know, it's a Citizen's Guide to the Food and Farm Bill. So guide us as citizens how at this moment when the House is talking about cutting food stamps, doing things to actually cut conservation programs, how would you say a citizen gets involved?
You know, the first thing is you have to get educated. And this program is a great opportunity to do that. Reading, you know, what's coming out of the EWG, familiarizing yourself with the issue, which is a rather big issue, or even reading Food Fight, which I highly recommend. But, you know, you first get your hands around this issue, and there's a bit of a code to crack, right? There's a lot of bureaucratic language and programs and 15 different categories, spending categories in this bill, because it seems to try to want to please everybody. But I have to say that there's nothing more important as a citizen than that you can get involved in. If you care about school lunch programs, if you care about animal welfare, healthy fish and wildlife across the land, making sure people get enough to eat, family farmers, organic research. I mean, there's something for everybody in the Farm Bill. And unfortunately, not all representatives understand that even if you're not from, you know, a commodity-producing district, that this bill has something to do with you. And in fact, it has something to do with everybody.
Well, especially
everywhere.
So just, go ahead, Kari.
Yeah, I'd love to just quickly encourage people. I think you should get educated. I think the message is really quite simple. It's really important that members of Congress hear from their constituents today and tomorrow, because really tomorrow is the day that the votes start on the Farm Bill, and there's going to be dozens of amendments that will be introduced that will allow the members of Congress to vote on things like means testing for farmers, so that cotton farmer in California that's getting $1.6 million in crop insurance would have that payment cut down to $50,000 per year.
It would cap the amount. They cap the amount of a payment.
It would cap the amount of the payment, or it would say that if you're earning over $750,000 a year, that you're going to have your crop insurance premium reduced by 15%. These are called crop insurance reform amendments, and there's a number of other ones, and I think your callers could call and urge their members to support the crop insurance reform amendments that do payment limits and means testing. They can also call to support conservation reform amendments. There's a number of really exciting conservation reform amendments that will be introduced that are going to end subsidies for factory farms. A lot of a chunk of the conservation money right now, unfortunately, is going to support subsidies for factory farms for their waste management. We need to shift those subsidies. There is a great conservation reform amendment that's being offered by Earl Blumenauer from Oregon. So they could urge support for that, as well as for organic agriculture amendments and local food amendments.
So, Kari, I take it all of those, the specifics that people want to learn more about that it's hard to catch on the radio, they can go to the Environmental Working Group website and find those, right?
Yes, absolutely. They can do that.
That's EWG.org, right?
.org,
and
right.
If you were going to name one more, specifically an online resource where somebody could go and really catch up on this stuff, where would you send them?
Go to foodfight2012.org.
Okay, foodfight2012.org and EWG.org. I want to get to a couple folks who are calling in. Dan in San Francisco, welcome to your call. Or Dane, perhaps. Dane?
Hello. Hello.
Yeah. If you could be brief, go ahead. We've got a couple of folks behind you, so go ahead.
Okay. My name's Donald, by the way. Sorry. Anyway.
Donald, welcome.
The question is just one of overarching policy direction. I don't hear anybody just summarizing the whole gist of the argument can be summarized in a very simple sentence. The current bill encourages quantity over quality. And I would like the experts to address the question about why that basic question isn't part of the policy debate. I mean, all the problems with the GMOs, the factory farms, I mean, you're addressing economic minutiae. You know, you're looking at the size of the farms, which I don't think we need to be.
Well, good one, Donald. Let's get a response from Dan and Kari. Dan, would you say that quantity over quality is the issue?
Yeah, I would say quantity over quality and bigger monoculture over diversified agriculture is definitely the focus. We have to start talking about health, and really, the Farm Bill is this huge driver of health, or it could be when it's properly administered, and that's, you know, making sure we have a diverse food supply that's really well on land, that's well taken care of, that then goes out into society and creates a certain kind of available food system.
And I want to get one last caller in before we go and get last thoughts from both of you, Dan and Kari, and that is George in San Francisco. And George, before you begin, I want to make sure we have an emailer who named Jackie, who wanted to know about cuts in the House bill to Meals on Wheels. So I'll make sure we get to address that. But George, why don't you go ahead?
Thanks. So stop me if I tune in late, but if our understanding is that if the food stamp program is a component of this bill, then in this discussion, there should be some way that people can go online or find a link at one of these websites you've already given that explains how to participate in the food stamp program as a consumer or a family, et cetera.
Yeah, maybe I think there's probably a lot of people who are eligible for food stamps who don't know how to access them. Kari or Dan, either you want to jump in with resources about that?
I would just encourage you to go, encourage listeners to go to feedingamerica.com. I think it's .com, .org. I'm not sure. Feeding America is a great resource. They bring together anti-hunger groups from around the country and are, you know, working really hard to defeat this farm bill that's going to cut 2 million people off of food stamps.
And any specifics about Meals on Wheels that either you can offer?
I don't believe that the Meals on Wheels program is funded through the farm bill, but I may be wrong about that.
All right. Well, we will follow up on that and get some confirmation one way or the other and put it on our website, yourcallradio.org. We've got about 1 minute left. Kari Hammerschlag, Dan Imhoff, final thoughts from you about where this, it seems to me many more people are starting to see the farm bill as a food bill and starting to see it as something that doesn't just involve big farms in rural areas, but that really impacts people across the country. Where do you think we are in this discussion? And after this bill is passed, one way or the other, how can people stay involved and change the discussion here? Carr, why don't you start?
I just think that right now it's really important for people to be contacting their members of Congress about the Farm Bill and let them know where your priorities are, whether it's conservation or healthy food or organic or local food. Those programs are being cut. There's not a lot of support in the Farm Bill right now for them. There's some, but there needs to be way more. And so it's only going to change if members of Congress hear from their constituents. Certainly the agriculture committees where they're writing these bills, are populated with people actually on the committees who are benefiting handsomely from these subsidy programs. You may have heard of Representative Fisher, who has been the fiercest advocate for cutting food stamps, while he himself gets millions of dollars in subsidies through his cotton farm.
That's pretty amazing, Dan.
There's so much hypocrisy on Capitol Hill right now, and the only way it's going to change is really getting money out of politics. The agribusiness lobby is spending over $120 million a year to influence the House and the Senate Ag Committees and other members of Congress. So I think, the citizens really need to wake up, recognize that this is not the best way for their tax dollars to be used to advance a healthy and sustainable food system, and people really need to get involved. At the local level, I just say people really should...
Curry.
Yeah, we don't have enough time.
We're going to have to leave it right there. Of course, these are deep issues, all kinds of levels to them. I want to thank you so much for bringing your expertise to the program. Kari Hammerschlag is Senior Food Policy Analyst at the Environmental Working Group. Their website, as well as the Feeding America website that she mentioned earlier, will be at yourcallradio.org if you want to learn more. Thanks also to Dan Imhoff. Dan, author of Food Fight, The Citizen's Guide to a Food and Farm Bill. I'm Matt Martin, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. Thanks for listening. Are you ready for the Affordable Care Act? On the next Your Call, we'll discuss what will change under President Obama's universal health care plan and how California is preparing for a plan that would require everyone to have health insurance by 2014. What are the new coverage options? Who will be most affected? And what resources are available for those who can't afford insurance? Join us live at 10 a.m. or email your questions to feedback@yourcallradio.org.
Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihei Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.